to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Sarah Lowe, and she'll be answering your most important questions on making fly fishing mistakes. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Sarah a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. You'll see a form in the right-hand column. Just fill in your name and email address, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded. Will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Sarah Lowe about, are you making mistakes fly fishing? Mystic Outdoors fly rods are designed and constructed by a team of professionals who are all committed to superb craftsmanship and turns creativity into beautiful functional fly fishing rods. Mystic is simply one of the best fly rod companies based in the United States. This month, Mystic is featuring their new Reaper X fly rod, a moderate fast action rod with a powerfully deep loading tip section that shoots line with impressive accuracy and protects even light tippets against hard-fighting fish. The Reaper X is available starting with a 3-weight and covering all the sizes up to 10-weight. This month only, you can buy one Reaper X and get one free. That's right, you heard it correctly. Buy one Reaper X and get one free. So don't delay. Get one for yourself. Get one as a present for a friend. But do it and go to mysticoutdoors.com and look for Reaper X. Again, it's mysticoutdoors.com, and look for Reaper X. Before we introduce Sarah, we'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. On our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Fly Fishers International and a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Sarah's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Sarah's book, A Guide's Guide to Fly Fishing Mistakes, courtesy of Skyhorse Publishing. And to learn more about the books that Skyhorse has to offer, go to skyhorsepublishing.com. They've got lots of books on fly fishing, and sure you'll find something that will interest you there. And here's how you win Sarah's book tonight. You must be one of the first people to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. It could be one or two-part questions. It just depends on how I'm feeling and how tough I want to make it for you. But the questions will be about something that Sarah and I talk about during the show, and you just submit your answer along with your name and your location on the text box on our homepage. So listen closely, take some notes, and hopefully you'll have the right answer to win Sarah's book. Our guest tonight is Sarah Lowe. Sarah is a New York State licensed fishing guide and fly fishing instructor with 20 years' experience organizing and leading fishing trips for novice and experienced anglers. She is a founding partner of High Spirits Unlimited, a travel company devoted to fly fishing trips. Off the water, Sarah published a how-to fly fishing book called A Guide's Guide to Fly Fishing and is working on her next book as well. She co-authored the Fly Fishing Hall of Fame and has served as a director of organizations, including Theodore Gordon Fly Fishers, a nonprofit for angling organization promoting river protection, and Juliana's Anglers, a fishing club for women. She curated an award-winning exhibit on the history of women in fly fishing and was honored by the Catskill Fly Fishing Center and Museum as the 2010 Outstanding Fly Fisher of the Year. She has been the subject of articles and publications from here to Japan, including the New York Times and Brown Alumni Monthly, and featured on television programs such as WNBC's Today in New York and the outdoor channel's Red Hook Outdoors. Currently president of the United States Croquet Association, former executive in entertainment advertising, Ms. Lowe is thrilled to be introducing anglers to the joys of fly fishing. Sarah, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thank you very much, Roger. Very excited.
Yeah, well, good to have you. Good to have you. And we've got a bunch of questions and a bunch of mistake makers out there.
But, all of us.
Somebody did write in and comment that, we shouldn't call them mistakes, learning opportunities or whatever, because really fly fishing is, that's what you do. Your whole life is learn, right? I mean, you never
that's
stop
right.
learning. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
absolutely
so,
right.
So we've got lots of questions. So we want to kind of pick your brain because you've seen a lot of fly fishers doing all the guiding you've done over the years and being involved in fly fishing for so long. So you've probably seen about everything that could happen, I suppose. Is that the case?
Probably, but let's whatever we don't do then right now that I haven't seen will happen some other time. So I'm sure that there are lots of questions that we can get. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Well, let's get started. I've kind of broken these down, and in your book you kind of broke down different sections as well, and that's the way some of the questions that came in from some of our audience kind of fit within those. So let's kind of go through some of those sections as you lined out in your book. One area was terminal tackle, and what are some general mistakes that you see people rigging up? You know, they come that morning on a guided trip, and they're futzing around with their rods. Do you see any common mistakes or errors? Yeah.
I do. And actually, some of them are so basic and happen to everyone, all of us, gear, guides and regular anglers. The most basic are that the line doesn't match the rod that's being cast. And a lot of times when something's put away, a reel is not put away in the correct container, and when an angler gets to water and puts their reel on, they discover that sometimes very late in the process that the line is not and the reel is not what they had thought they'd brought with them. Another thing is literally rods fall apart because they're made of several sections. And one thing before getting out onto the water, one thing that an angler should do, has to remember to do, is actually tighten down the sections of the rod. I've seen way too many times where unfortunately we've had to search the woods all around looking for the tip of a rod because it has fallen off somewhere and we have all lost rods that way or parts of rods. Another thing is just tie on any fly to get to the water. It doesn't matter what it is, but it protects the rod. And so you don't lose the tip of your rod, but also you can get your line out at the car and put a fly on and put the rod entirely together, not worry about anything. When you get to the water, the fly is going to be changed to match whatever's happening on the water. But those are ways to protect the rod, to protect the lines, and just get yourself out onto the water and start fishing as soon as possible.
That's interesting because that's one mistake I haven't made yet.
Good. I'm very
but I can
glad
see how that can
that.
Happen. I'm always checking, you know, is this a 5-weight? Is this a 4-weight? Is this a rod? But when you get a bunch of rods, yeah.
No, it's true. It's true. When you have a bunch of rods and you have a bunch of reels, oftentimes the wrong reel gets, and I can't tell you the number of times that has happened where someone has brought the wrong reel, by mistake obviously, put it on without thinking, gotten out onto the water even, started casting, and it just doesn't, the line doesn't move the rod as well as
yeah.
it should.
I can see that happening, boy, yeah. Yeah, and you're wondering, what the heck? Has my casting gone to hell here or what?
Exactly.
Yeah, good. Well, those are some good tips. Jerry Kemple in Jefferson City, Missouri, wrote in and he says, can you recommend a knot to tippet to hook for an angler with poor eyesight as well as arthritis? And that's happening to a lot of older folks as they fish into their later years.
That is absolutely happens to everyone, unfortunately. It just is. Of course, the first and easiest thing you can do is when you tie your clinch knot, which is the knot you use to tie your tippet to the fly, you just tie a regular clinch knot and don't improve it. One doesn't need to tie any extra, make any extra turns on the knot. It just don't improve your clinch knot. But there are other things that one can do, especially if you're hampered in tying knots. First of all, if you can, just if you want to, pre-tie flies before going to the water. Tie them onto the tippet with your knot, and then you're only you're taking your time and you're doing it early before you get to the water. So you're not nervous about it. You can take your time, and then you will tie a sturgeon's knot to tie the larger leader to the tippet itself to the leader, and you can tie a bunch in advance and put them on a piece of cardboard that you have come in, a small piece of cardboard with quarter-inch splits on either side to wrap a fly and leader around so that you can come in. Another thing you can do is make use of the uni knot, which is hard to describe, of course, here on the on a phone call, but what it is, it's a much more simple knot to tie, and you can actually use a uni, U-N-I knot, to tie lots, to use it for a lot of your knots, to replace some of your knots with the uni, and that would be to tie a fly onto the tippet or to tie tippet onto a leader. You actually can and should try that, the uni knot.
Okay.
That will help a lot.
Yeah, uni knot. Okay. Yeah, and I'm sure that there's probably lots of instructions out on the internet.
There are.
Yeah.
And that's why it's not worth going into over
sure.
the phone, just because it's just it gets confusing. But it, there are lots of instructions online or in books.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Great. Any other tips you might give on you know, just leaders and tippets in general that might be helpful?
I really typically. Because a lot of times people don't remember what size tippet they should use for their flies. And typically, estimate what size your fly is. Hopefully you know what size your fly is. But if you don't, just estimate and divide that number by 3 so that you will have, and that is the size of the tippet that you would tie on. So if you have a size 18 fly, then you divide it by 3, and you have 6. Well, you would use a 6X tippet. Now, a lot of people don't go down to an 18, a size 18 fly. That's quite all right. But if you have a size 12 fly, then divide it by 3 and tie on a 4X tippet. If your water is clear, then divide by 4. This is just a general rule. And so you would go down a size of leader, because if the water's clear, the fish can see a leader that much more. And that's absolutely, you know, what one should do. In terms of tying on, I don't actually improve my clinch knot. So that if tying from leader, when you tie a fly on and you tie a clinch knot on, don't improve it. It's just not necessary. Most guides do not improve improve the clinch knot, because there is a clinch knot and there's an improved clinch knot, which is just tying an extra, and you just don't need to do it. Of course, if water is really heavy and fish are really pounding the flies that you are offering or the natural flies, then either improve your clinch knot, but also go up one size of leader, of tippet, I'm sorry, of tippet, because you don't want to lose your flies you don't want to lose a fish because your line is too light in size.
Sure, yeah.
So that's what I would say.
Yeah, okay. Okay, other question here from Dan in Bismarck, North Dakota. This is regarding finding fish. He says, my question relates to fishing unfamiliar water. What is the biggest mistake one makes when approaching a promising-looking river they have not fished?
A lot of times, biggest mistake is that, I think, is that people wade in and treat the river as if it's their home water, just going, fishing it just normally, as without even thinking about it. But I go back to, if you're fishing with water on water that you are not familiar with, use that stop, look, and listen technique, where you stop at the water's edge. You approach that river, you stop at the edge, and you gauge what's happening around you. You want to match the tempo of what's going on. If it's a faster current, okay, you're going to go a little faster than you normally do. If it's slow water, slow yourself down and match that. Then look at your surroundings. Take notice of everything that's happening, but what's happening on the water, what's happening on top of the water, in the water, and above the water. And in the water, you probably won't see too far below you, but if there are flies all over the place, take notice of that. If there are rising fish, take notice of that. If there are no rising fish, obviously you're going to fish under the surface, but you want to definitely take advantage of all of that. So you really have to pay attention to how different that water is from what you're normally used to. Then, if nothing's coming up to the surface and you can't gauge anything with the fishing, then you're going to want to fish, obviously, under the surface with a nymph or with a streamer. And typically, what you would do is cast, using with your nymph or with your streamer, cast across your stream and slightly downstream. Then you do that a few times, or three times. Then with that same length of line, which should be short to begin with, about 20 feet, then cast three more times, adding life to that same drift. Then add a foot of line. So now you're casting 21 feet, approximately. Cast that three or four times with a dead drift. Then add life and cast again with life to it for another three times. Lengthen your line. Continue that foot at a time until you've reached the limit of your cast. Then move downstream for two or three feet and do the same thing all over again. Just casting with the longer line that you have come to. You don't have to start all over again with the 20 feet. But this way, you'll see what's going on. You'll find out where the fish are and where and if they're active there, if there's anything going on in that water at all. Guides use this method to determine where the fish are, and it helps. Now, typically, guides will break off as fast as possible so they don't disrupt the river for fishing. But this way, you know where the fish are. And I would suggest using a woolly bugger or an attractor, or something that, or a nymph that's active at the time. Yellow colors I really like a lot, and I would use red or yellow for my streamers. And then, of course, otherwise, use a hare's ear nymph or a pheasant tail, depending on what's going on at the time of year. And so that's what I would do for an area that looks fishy, but you don't know.
Sarah, I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
Oh, dear.
A little muffled, so I don't know if you can adjust your phone there.
Okay, I'll try. I'm sorry.
Okay, maybe just hold it away from your mouth just a little bit.
Okay,
I'll try that. Yeah, and good. So again, I think it was what, stop, look, and listen? Is that what you said earlier?
I say stop, look, and listen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you get to the water, you really get a better feel for it than just, this is great and fishy.
Yeah, that's what I hear from a lot of professional fly fishers, is that too often we make the mistake of just wading in and literally stepping on the fish as we do that we could have been catching. Yeah, so seems like it's a common problem we all have. Yeah. What about you know, approaching the fish. Let's say we do see, you know, a fish rising, or we can see a fish that's feeding in a nymphing lane. And what are some of the mistakes we make when approaching that that feeding fish?
Well, again, it's because often people use the same technique when they approach a fish all the time. And there's an example I would love to point out to give you, which is there's a wonderful pool on the Beaverkill River. It's called Barrel Pool. And there are fabulous large trout on the far side of the river. Between most anglers and the far side of the river are several currents that happen. Most people walk right into this river and cast across all these currents and try very hard for these large fish. The problem with a lot of currents and several currents is, of course, that by the time the fly reaches those fish, that fly is actually dragging or something of that nature. And instead, an angler can actually should look around, and what happens on the barrel pool, which is very typical of so many pools, is that an angler has walked right past a lot of fish without realizing it, but just has been so excited about the large fish. So really, if you just look around you onto the behind you, where fish may be, where the water may be softer and not moving as fast, there can be several fish. I took someone out on Barrel Pool one time, and who wanted to see the river in a different way. His first move was to actually do exactly what I just described to him. He walked across the river as far as he could get and cast across several currents. Instead, I pointed behind him and said, try casting that way. And his scot, because he thought that they were just smaller fish that he had walked past. Well, he actually walked past several fish, probably a lot of fish, but he caught several fish, a couple of 12 inchers, a 16 incher, and finally a 19 inch brown. So the thing is, what you want to do is, when you see fish, there may be fish in lots of places, and you want to look around you. If they're rising fish, look around to see what where other places would be. Other places, perhaps not the most obvious spots, perhaps because you may be able to find fish, or you may find fish, and you've walked right past them or stepped right on them.
Right, right. Yep. Sounds familiar. Well, listen, we've got time to take our first break here, but stick with me, Sarah, and when we come back, we'll try to answer some more of the questions that have come in about things we could do better at. So stick with me, and we'll be right back. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly and Kodiak rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They've been used by anglers and hunters all over the world for over 15 years, including Dave Whitlock, one of the fly fishing's greatest innovators. Dave said, "With my Watermaster, I can enjoy more fishing per hour than any other method I have ever tried. After 2.5 years, testing 15 models of kickboats, I'm convinced that the Watermaster is the ultimate personal flotation craft for warm and cold water fly fishing. Visit Watermaster today and take a look at the ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to BigSkyInflatables.com. Again, that's BigSkyInflatables.com. If you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, we're talking with Sarah Lowe about making fly fishing mistakes. If you'd like to ask Sarah a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Sarah, I always ask my guests, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world, so tell us about what you're up to lately.
Lately, I've been doing a lot of fishing in other parts of the country, and which I find very exciting, and I'm from the northeast, And my home waters are New York and Connecticut, which is fabulous fishing, I have to say. But lately, I always go out west anyway in the summertime. And what I tend to do is I have a company called High Spirit Unlimited. And my company plans trips, organizes trips, and runs trips, for especially for fishing out in, well, in different parts of the country. And that's highspiritsatme.com. That's it. We have a website. And literally, we use the guides that are local to the area, and one should, so that anyway, because you feel comfortable. I mean, those people really know their water. And I've just because of it, I've been all over the country and all over, you know, and fished myself, because I check everything out before I bring other people to any water whatsoever. I want to make sure it's safe. I want to make sure it's fun. And also, I check also the places that to stay as well. So that's what I'm doing. That's what I've been doing a lot of. Obviously, I wrote this book, A Guide's Guide to Fly Fishing Mistakes. And currently, I'm working on one for anglers who have difficulty fishing. They love fly fishing, but whether they're older, whether they're sick or something that is stopping them from fishing or slowing them down, that's what I'm working on right now.
Good, good. Now, do you have a website for High Spirits?
Yes.
Where people can learn about your trips?
Yeah. Yes. It's High Spirits. H-I-G-H, highspiritsunlimited.com.
Okay, unlimited spelled out?
Unlimited spelled out, I'm sorry.
Okay,
yes.
highspiritsunlimited.com.
Dot com. That's correct.
Good. Well, mm-hmm. People can check that out and look into going on a trip with Sarah. So take her up on that and check out what they're doing there. Well, good. Well, thanks for sharing what you're up to, and look forward to that new book coming out, too. And whenever
Thank
that
you.
Happens, you'll have to let me know. So, good. okay, jumping back in here, there was a follow-up question on terminal tackle here from Manny Zanger in Roscoe, New York. It says, hi, Sarah, do you approve a loop-to-loop for tying a tippet to a leader?
In terms of tying a loop-to-loop from tippet to leader, I don't. I like to use a tighter connection and not use loop-to-loop. A great thing about loop-to-loop and what that is especially people who buy their leaders in a packet, they come usually with a loop on them, and you can attach your leader to your fly line with the loop that is on your fly line, that comes on your fly line. It's not a bad thing to do, especially if one changes leaders frequently or wants or buys the packaged leaders. The only thing is I like to knot my leaders. It allows a little bit more control with casting. And so it's because it is tighter. The loop-to-loop is can be difficult when one is using small hold rods, because when you catch your fish and bring your line in, then you will have to bring your loops through the eyes of the leader. Through the eyes of the rod. It's okay, and that's absolutely fine, and that's doable, and most people do, but I prefer to tie a knot rather than, so I cut off my loops.
Yeah, so those loops come through the rod guides going chunk, chunk, chunk. Right?
Exactly. Certainly doable, and it's fine to do that. Of course, when the fish runs a second or third or whatever time, and you have your loop inside the guides at that point, then you just have to remember to help the line out as the leader, or hold the rod straight to so that your loop-to-loop doesn't catch up on the guides and break your rod. It doesn't happen often, but still, it's something to make sure that you check into. You check if a fish runs again.
I would think that like you say, if you're just getting ready to net a fish and you've got that loop connection within your guides, that when that chunks out, so to speak, if it runs again, then it could be a point of failure of losing that fish too, right? With
That's exactly true. So you can break your rod, you can lose a fish, which is a disappointing thing to do, of course, lose the fish. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but breaking your rod is much worse, that's for sure.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, it is.
Okay, we've got a bunch of questions on casting and presentation here. Andy Cordova in Reno, Nevada wrote in, and he says, Sarah, am I just getting old or is there something I'm doing wrong? Often when I'm making a long cast, sometimes during double hauling, just when I'm about to start my final forward cast and release, the line slips out of my hand and the cast falls behind me in a pile. It doesn't happen all the time, but enough to make me think I'm doing something wrong. Any ideas for Andy?
The only thing I can think of is that the casting may not be wrong, but it sounds more like what's happened, because it's not happening all the time. It sounds more as if, in preparation for fishing, sort of during that last cast, or more correctly, just before the final cast, he is relaxing enough that he's just letting go of that line. And since it doesn't happen all the time and it's not happening because of the cast, I think it has to do with more of a mental thing. I think that it's a relaxation. I would suggest that if there's a particular routine to the casting, such as a casting twice and then create the final cast on the third cast, mix it up a bit so that sometimes one would have three casts, sometimes before the final cast, sometimes two casts, sometimes four casts, whatever it is, so that your body really has to think and you have to think through what you're doing, because that's the other thing. I just think it's more of a mental mistake than a casting mistake, since it does not happen all the time. And certainly we make a lot of mental mistakes as well, and it's just a matter of then really talking yourself through the cast and mixing it up so that you're not always doing the exact same routine. And that's sort of what I think would be the best way to handle that, or to try them anyway.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Makes you think about it, yeah. Another question came in. It says, I can't cast an indicator bobber type worth beans. What are the most common mistakes we make when casting this setup?
A bobber can be a difficult thing, and that's another thing as well. The first thing that one should do, I think, is shorten the cast. Try shorter cast with your bobber, and so that you get comfortable with casting a bobber. Don't try for the long distance casts at all. Just shorten that cast up until you feel comfortable and can add an extra foot, or and slowly add more length to your line. Another thing I would do, of course, is lob the fly. I mean, that's another option. Typically, when you have a bobber, let the line go downstream and keep the line the same length always, and then just hold the thing up and just lob it. Literally, your cast is not a back cast and a forward cast, but it's literally from downstream to upstream where you just lob. Just like that's all I can think of if you have a bobber, because typically a bobber would get hung up or whatever. The other thing that one can do is use a method that I typically use with streamers, but you can use with a heavily weighted nymph, and certainly with a bobber, which is you cast once, cast the length that you're comfortable with, drop your line, your fly and line to the water, but pick it up immediately afterwards And on your back cast, lengthen line or forward cast, whichever you feel comfortable with, and cast again one time. Drop it to the water. Drop the line to the water. Before the fly, again, has chance to sink, pick it up again and cast out again. So the thing is that what you're doing is you're only sending the line out, you're only sending the fly out once, bringing it up again and casting one more again and to the line. So between each cast, you're actually dropping your fly to the water. And that means that instead of getting caught up, what that fly that does is it allows you to lengthen your line without false casting, which is often how a bobber gets caught up as well, and as does a streamer. So that if you do something like that, that will help, that can help with your casting.
Yeah, that makes sense. And kind of using the water to do the initial loading of the rod on the way back,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then you're not waving it back and forth, getting it all tangled up.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Which we all do when at some point in our lives. So that, yes, exactly.
Yeah, well, when you got two flies potentially, plus some weight on there, plus a strike indicator, there's a lot flying around in the air up there, that's for sure.
Yes, there is. The only thing is that if you use that method, which is a fabulous method, you definitely want to have exhausted your dry fly fishing first, because it will change. The surface of the water will be chewed up because you will have, so the thing is, you do any kind of dry fly fishing you think you might want to do, and then cast with a nymph or a streamer or with a dropper but do that method is a fabulous way to lengthen line until you get to where you want it to be eventually.
Yeah, sounds good. Okay, time for another break. When we come back, we'll talk more about casting and presentation with Sarah Lowe. Looking for that shot at a permit? Whipray Key Fishing Lodge in Belize is where you want to be. When you stay at Whipray Key Fishing Lodge, you're on a private island, and they're only minutes away from some of the finest permit fishing in Belize. Whipray Key is just a 30-minute boat ride from Placentia. Once you're there, you'll be fishing Permit Alley, one of Belize's best fisheries, and you won't be taking long boat rides to get started. You'll fish with world-class guides like Daniel Cabral, whose family has fished the area for over 30 years. Want to switch it up and fish for tarpon and bonefish and make it a grand slam? They can make it happen at Whipray Key Fishing Lodge. Book your next adventure now. Visit WhiprayKeyFishingLodge.com. That's Whipray, C-A-Y-E, FishingLodge.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. And we're talking with Sarah Lowe about fly fishing mistakes. And if you'd like to ask Sarah a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. Use that Q&A text box to send us your question. Okay, Sarah, we have I'm trying to sort this one out. Let's see if you can sort it out. Dino in Michigan wrote in. He says, any thoughts on leader straightening on the cast? Have played with leader stiffness and fly weight or air resistance? So that's part one of the question. I'm guessing he wants to cast with the leader straight out. Is that what you're guessing? Or
I am guessing that. No,
okay.
that makes total sense.
Okay.
Because a lot of times the leader, for whatever purpose, either because it just was folded up or something or rolled up to begin with or whatever it is. It just isn't as straight as the line. So to straighten your line or your leader, and this is when you're casting, use a single haul. And that will use the single haul on your, just before you reach the water, so on your forward cast. And you do that as the rod starts to accelerate forward on your cast, you pull the line down a few inches. And with the line, the combination of the line at the top of your rod unfurling naturally, as it always does, and the line at the bottom of the rod being tucked back, because of that pull, that will increase the speed of the line and cause your tippet to straighten out. So actually, you use a single haul, and I will do that when I want to make sure that I have a straight line for whatever, you know, and sometimes, and I'll do it, sometimes it's because you've got a heavy fly, sometimes it's because there is a breeze. Whatever it is, it just allows you a little bit more control on how you're going to land your fly, and it will definitely straighten your tippet.
Okay. Dino also had a second part to his question. He says, what types of flies fish best with leader slack for drag-free drifting or sinking, and how do you trade that off against sensing or responding to fish?
All right, say that again. What?
Yeah, what types of flies, he wants to know, work best with a slack leader for drag-free drifting or sinking, and how do you trade that off against sensing or responding to fish? I think rather than tight line nymphing or tight line dry fly fishing, you know, and you have that slack in there, he's worried about sensing the fish, you know, on the take, I guess.
I'm not sure in terms of really pretty much all flies will work well for drag-free drifting. It just depends on how you present the fly, whether your cast throws in some slack into your line or not. You just don't want to throw a straight line and then expect the fly to drift without drag. So you definitely want to throw in some extra slack. So the types of flies that fish best for drag-free drifting or sinking, I'm not sure that there's anything that doesn't work well. You just want to make sure that you are throwing extra slack into your line and letting that fly drift downstream with using that extra slack.
Go ahead.
In terms of sensing or responding to the fish, for that, of course, if you use a strike indicator or you watch your line, then there you can sense the fish if they're hitting the fly at all. And responding to fish, if you have slack in the line and you're casting downstream or either downstream or upstream, but you have extra slack in the line so that your fly drifts naturally, then what you want to do is when a fish takes that fly, you want to pull in two different directions. So with your rod hand, you would pull your rod one direction, and with your line hand, pull the line the other direction. So you actually are pulling twice as hard or twice as much line as you normally would. And that's how you would really bring in fish if you've got slack, because otherwise a fish will come off. He'll spit that line out very quickly, and you won't have had a chance to set your hook. Pull two different directions.
Yeah, like rod and both hands away from each other, basically, as you pull
exactly.
the rod one way exactly. and your line the other way. Yeah. Yep, makes perfect sense. Okay, so you had talked about doing a single haul just a minute ago, and we have another question from Gary Hamilton in Idaho. He says, are there any methods, habits, skills, tricks, et cetera, one could use to make it possible to learn the haul and double haul tactic? I just can't seem to get it.
It is like eating. I mean, it's like walking and chewing gum at the same time, patting yeah. one's head and like rubbing one's tummy. It can be a very difficult thing, and either to do a haul or to do a double haul. It's amazing how some people get it and some people don't. I literally lay in bed for a long time. For nights, trying to figure it out, and I just visualized it in my head. I know people who have gone onto the dance floor and done the double haul, theoretically, what they call doing the double haul, and just practiced on as they were dancing. But one thing to do to create, to just to get the haul, is to really break everything down into steps. And first of all, stand on firm ground, not in the water. And cast behind you, just to do a single haul behind you. Cast behind you and pull your line down at the same time as you're casting behind you. And then stop and let the line fall to the ground. And you do that several times. You cast in front of you, pull the line down at the time of the casting, and stop. And do that several times, and just keep doing that. And then eventually put the two together, where you're casting in front and pulling the line down, and you're casting behind you and pulling the line down. But literally, just break it down and do a single haul, one step at a time, and don't, and eventually put them all together. The double haul then would be by putting it together, doing the haul on the back cast and the haul on the front cast. But just break it down is the best thing to do. And so much so that you are literally doing literally a back cast all by itself and stopping and letting it fall on the ground and then doing the full cast.
And feel that load in both directions when you do it, right?
Yeah.
Feel the line, load the rod. There's also some videos out there that you can watch too, Gary, online. Or one of the best ways to learn some of this stuff is just take a lesson from a certified fly fishing, you know, instructor. It's amazing what you can learn in an hour from a pro. I mean, I've done it several times, and it's always worth the few bucks that you invest in that. But and it's also worth learning the double and single haul just for fishing, whether you're fishing for trout or tarpon. It can make life a lot easier once you know how to do it. So
That's worth the time.
True. Yeah.
When I fish myself, I haul without even thinking about it. I mean, I've got it down, obviously. But I absolutely include a haul always in my casting. One, to stay believer, which we had talked about before.
Sarah, can you, Sarah, sorry for interrupting, but can you adjust your phone again? I really hear what you're saying.
Sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead. Is that work? Is that better?
Oh, yeah, much better. Much better. Yep.
Okay. I haul always when I fish, or just about always. One, to straighten the leader, and two, just to control the cast that much more. And I just do it naturally. So I would include it, once you have it down, I would absolutely include it with your fishing. And again, and you're right, with casting, you can do any kind of fishing, tarpon or trout or anything at all will take a haul, and you will be happy to use it. When you take a lesson from a pro, a casting lesson, do it on land and feel, and you should feel, and if they're suggesting on land, be absolutely comfortable with that idea, because then you don't have the what's happening on the water, you don't have the distraction of anything else, and you're only thinking about the casting. So absolutely do it on land. It's the best way to learn.
Good suggestion. Speaking of casts, what different kinds of casts should you know at a minimum, and why? I mean, if there's two or three different casts, what would you suggest to learn?
I don't know that there's a particular minimum number that one should use. You definitely want to have different casts available to you for different conditions. Whether you're fishing downstream, sometimes you want to add slack. Whether you're fishing upstream and you want to ensure that the fly comes down first. When you're fishing over currents, when you're fishing when there's overhang above you, when there's brush behind you, all of that actually requires suggests the use of different casts. I have when I fish downstream, because I usually fish downstream, but when I want to add slack, I'll use sometimes the S-cast, and that would be when a fish is below me in the same or next to the column of water that I'm standing in. Then I would use an S-cast, which is essentially like an S-curve. Or I would use the reach cast so that I make sure that my fly comes downstream before the rest of the line. I also would use the reach cast when fishing upstream to ensure that my fly comes downstream before the line. When you fish with overhang, definitely you want to make sure that you don't get hooked up on the trees above you. And if you remove that, then you would do any. There are a number of different casts that you can use the bow and arrow cast. If you're just doing a short 25-foot cast, if you are worried about the brush behind you, fish an oval cast. I mean, I'm just naming these casts. There are so many different casts. An oval cast and a continuous oval cast, which is sometimes called a Belgian cast, that allows you to have your line out and have a long distance of line, but instead of straightening the line behind you on the back cast, you actually cast as if you were casting in an oval, which means the line stays long, but because with an oval, it never straightens out behind you, but stays in the oval. There are so many different kinds of casts that literally for every different condition that you're in. There's a steeple cast, which is literally if you have trees above you, then you, or behind you, or, you know, all of it, if you're just surrounded by trees, and you're fishing small water, you can cast where you literally take your line straight up into the air and bring it back down again in front of you. There are so many different casts, and you can make them up too, but again, it depends. They all are about because of different situations. So that's the way you want, that's what really, your conditions will affect your cast or will dictate your cast.
Yeah, I like the part about inventing your own.
Yeah,
I'm sure
important.
I've done that plenty
very
of times. Yeah, how do I get that fight? That's okay, well, we'll try this.
Which makes total sense. And actually, one thing that one does typically is there is an actual cast called a puddle cast. And that looks a lot like the cast that we all try to get away from, which puts slack in the water, and it literally makes it looks like your fly line just puddled down in front of you and is a mess. And that's something that we so try to get away from, but actually that is a cast as well. So literally what that is allows a lot of slack to happen and allows your fly to drift clean, and that's great. So chances are if you don't do a cast that you wanted to do and you end up with a puddle, that's quite all right. And the puddle would be fly line, fly tippet, the leader. Go for it. Just absolutely just leave it. Whatever your cast was, you just fish it because you fish the cast that you threw, and you'll correct it the next time around. The next time you cast, you'll work a little bit harder, possibly, and correct whatever you've got going on. And that's quite all right.
Yeah. Good. One more question on casting. It's actually about mending. So what's the is there a correct or incorrect way to mend?
There isn't a correct way to mend per se. People actually seem to do what feels comfortable to them. But you can mend on the water or you can mend in the air before the line lands on the water. And those are called aerial mends. So you can mend when you mend in the air. I typically mend in the air, especially if the water is clear or slow or anything that might disrupt the fish. You probably would rather not mend on the water, but mend in the air. Mending is correcting your cast by adding slack into it. I typically would use a reach cast. And what that is casting out, straight out, and on your forward cast before the line hits the water, then reaching upstream of where you want your fly to land so that it creates an upstream mend in the line, and then dropping it to the water so that you have, you literally have a bend in your line, and you come back, bring your line, your rod back to pointing at your fly. So therefore you have an upstream, it's a C or shape on the water, and that will allow you to have slack, that gives you slack that will then allow your fly to drift naturally downstream or upstream, I mean as it goes downstream rather. So I don't think there is a correct way. I don't think that if you do it in the air versus if you do it once your fly has reached the water, I don't think one is more correct. Well, you can do whichever feels best to you, but I like to mend in the air so that I'm not disrupting the water.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, one more, another break here, and we'll talk about fly selection and fighting and landing fish. So stick with us, folks, and we'll be right back. Fly Fishers International needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. The organization provides grants to help with restoration of habitats like Wolf Creek in Idaho and Sands Creek in Upper Delaware in New York, and funds projects that collect valuable data about fish and their habitats, like the peacock bass study in Miami, Florida. Fly Fishers International core values remained unchanged: to serve as a strong advocate for fly fishing in all waters for all fish, and to preserve and promote the arts of fly casting and fly tying, and to help ensure future generations can continue to enjoy these one-of-a-kind experiences. These efforts won't be nearly as effective without your help. If you're not already a member, we invite you to join Fly Fishers International as they work to cultivate conservation, education, and community within the sport of fly fishing. Join Fly Fishers International today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to their website at flyfishersinternational.org. Again, that's flyfishersinternational.org. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Sarah Lowe about fly fishing mistakes. If you'd like to ask her a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your questions. Okay, let's see here. Oh, okay, so a question came in on the Internet from Bob Garman in Philadelphia. Here's Sarah. He says, I'm a right-handed caster, but occasionally when I give my arm a rest and cast with my left hand, sometimes my fly ends up hitting the rod on my forward cast. What would I be doing wrong?
If the fly is hitting your rod, you're probably moving the rod. Typically, moving the tip of the rod, what you may be dropping it or raising it. So it's no longer going in that straight line. So you're probably moving the rod tip one direction or the other. And that would be why your fly would hit the rod. Typically, whatever the rod tip does, then the fly and the line itself will do the same thing. So if you drop that rod a little bit, then the line will drop as well. And that would typically be, I think, you're probably moving the rod tip, or the rod itself. And that would make sense if you're not using your dominant hand. Although I have to say, I congratulate him, Bob, for using the other hand at times, because there's no reason why one can't use their non-dominant hand. I remember someone came to me and he had set up an angler had set up a day of fishing, and he got to the day of fishing, and he had fallen and hurt his hand. And so he couldn't use his dominant hand for fishing. And I said, that's fine, we'll use the other hand instead. And he actually did very well. First he thought it was kidding, of course, but he did very well because he was forced to talk himself through mentally, or, you know, he didn't have to say it out loud, but talk himself through the casting, because it wasn't his dominant hand. And I think it was great that he used the opposite. First of all, it got him out on the water when he thought he wasn't going to be able to get out on the water, but because his hand was hurt. But the fact is, by using your non-dominant hand, you have to tell yourself how to cast and literally go back to the basics. And I think, and that's great. And everyone should have to just try that every now and then. The fact that you're hitting that Bob is hitting his fly against the rod is hard on the rod as it is, but also typically that would be, I would think, he's dropping the tip of his rod or something in his rod, so his cast is not the straight line that he does with his other hand.
Yeah. Okay. Talking about fly selection, when you first arrive at the water, how do you select your first fly?
Well, I personally am a dry fly fisherman. When I possibly can, that's the first thing I do. I will use all dry flies I possibly can, and before I move on to nymphs or to streamers. So that's I am biased in that respect. But when the first thing you want to do is, of course, look to see what's happening. If fish are coming up to the surface, absolutely put on a dry. You would, of course, look to see if you can see what the fish are taking, then you would put that fly on. If they don't take what you think they're taking, I mean, let's say you think they're taking a size 12 blue-winged olive, and they don't seem to be taking that fly, but then go down to a size 14. So I would absolutely use a dry fly if they are rising up, or an emerger of whatever I'm seeing. And if you don't see anything, then I would go below the surface and put on a hare's ear or a pheasant tail, probably a pheasant tail, because I think there are more brown nymphs than there are lighter colored nymphs, which would be the hare's ear. And that's what I would do. But again, I go back to that stop, look, and listen. If they are rising, then absolutely, I personally will prefer a dry.
Now, do you often fish a dry with an emerger dropper? Is that a combination you use? Or?
It's a great combination. And a wonderful thing to do is to fish two different flies. First, for your dropper, that second fly, you can put on your first fly, whatever it is, and attach a dropper to that first fly. And you can attach it at the bend of the hook. You can attach it at the eye of the hook. I don't love that as much. The first fly does not float as naturally as it would if you attach a second fly to the bend of the hook. And you would tip it to the bend of the hook, and then a second fly at the end. A great thing to do would be to if you aren't sure what they're taking, put on a dry and a nymph. Put on a dry of two different kinds of dry. Put on a streamer and a nymph, or a nymph and a streamer rather, so that you have a streamer which represents a bait fish chasing after a nymph. Or put on, you know, a couple of different flies. Whatever you do, just see what they take what the fish will take based on trying a couple of different flies, sizes, different stages of the life, whatever it is. So whether you do an emerger and a nymph, whether you're, you know, there are two different stages right there. And I think that's, I mean, I would definitely try that.
Okay. Dave in North, he's from the North Georgia Mountains. He says, how long should you use a fly before you try something different? So how often do you change up?
Well, there are lots of schools of thought on that. And usually it depends on how fast you're fishing, of course. Some people, I've heard some people say cast about 5 or 6 times, and if nothing happens, then change your fly. I would give it a little bit longer than that. If it depends on how active the fish are at the time. If you're seeing fish coming up to the surface, I would give it 5 or 6 times, and then maybe I would actually give it 10. I would cast about 10 times and then try something different. If you're not seeing anything coming up to the surface, but you're trying a dry or you're trying, whatever you're trying, give it more like 5 minutes, 10 minutes at the most before you try on a different fly. If you really like that particular fly and you really believe in it, stick with it. You know, part of the whole fishing thing is what you believe in as well. But really, literally, probably I would give a good 10 casts. No more than 10 if the fish are active. And if nothing's happening, I would change flies after about a good 5 minutes. So, you know, mm-hmm. And that's what I would do.
Another question. I often lose sight of my dry flies because they're so small. Is there anything I can do to see them better?
Yes, you can. And there are a couple of things that you can do. This is so typical, especially towards the end of the day when if you're using small flies and it's starting to get dark, you don't have as much light in the air and you can't see. You could put on you can use a little bit of floatant of the floatant that's the putty. That is it's bright colored putty that's usually neon colors. Put that about 1 foot, 2 feet away from the fly, from your fly. You put a small amount on because you're not using it as a strike indicator per se, but you're actually just using it if you see the water dimple within the 2 feet of that bright spot in the water, then set your hook because a fish may have come up for your fly if you can't see the fly. You could also use a strike indicator, of course, but you could use another fly. So tie on 2 flies. The second and the smaller, and this being the smaller fly, is the one that you would expect, you are expecting the fish to take, and another fly 2 feet above it, again, further away from it so that you aren't hampering anything that happens around that tiny little dark fly that you have. And this is for dry flies, so I'm assuming that you are talking about dry flies.
Yeah.
But I would use strike indicator putty especially in a small amount because it's just knowing that you will have to replace it quite often because with such a small amount of the strike indicator putty, it just goes off. It falls off your line pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But that's
yeah.
what I would do.
Okay. Okay. Some questions on fighting and landing fish. And hooking up, I guess, too. Here, Rick, Northwestern Pennsylvania, wrote in. He says, when giving instructions to a new fly fisher, what would you suggest to the person to increase his chance of a good hook set and how to play the fish?
To increase the chance of setting the hook to begin with, I would suggest to the new angler, to stand in faster water, in water that has a current of some sort, because if it's very clear, slow water, then a fish has a chance to look at a fly, spit it out, etc. When you're in faster water, the fish have less of a chance, and often they will actually hook themselves practically because they will take that fly so fast that they actually hook themselves. And I think that's really important for a new fisher to get that feel and to have a fish on the line. I would also use flies that require a lot of action. March brown nymphs, for example, Icenichia fly that because a newer angler is not going to dead drift as well as a more experienced angler. So if you use a fly that requires live action, then especially the March brown nymph, then that will actually entice a fish a lot faster. Also, I would suggest using a shorter amount of line, like 30 feet of line top, so as not to deal with slack at all and not to have to deal with that. In terms of playing the fish, the number one thing to remind a newer angler and to all of us is to keep a bend in the rod. Once a fish has hooked up, so once you have a fish on the hook that's at the end of your line, make sure that when you're when you're retrieving that fish, you keep a bend in your rod. So you do not straighten that rod out at all. And as long as you keep that bend in your rod and you are bringing in the line, then the chances of bringing in that fish as well all the way to the net are very, our tops, which is very good. It's just you've got to remember to have the bend in your rod.
Go ahead and get a drink of water if you need.
I'm sorry, there goes my throat.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I would recommend that.
Okay. Mark Johnston in Lansing, Michigan, he says, mm-hmm. I've been told to apply sideways pressure on larger fish and on smaller fish, straight up pressure to land them. Do you agree with this advice? And if yes, why the difference?
I don't think I really agree with that. I think that with smaller fish, if they're really small, you can just bring them in by hand practically without the use of your rod. And in that case, again, that's the bend type thing that you have to keep that bend in. In terms of larger versus smaller, as a rule, I don't see that you want to play them any differently. And I love the idea. I love the fact that he is mentioning the fact that that he plays the fish on certainly the larger fish with sideways pressure. But you can do that with all fish. But I love the sideways pressure because what you're doing instead of bringing the line straight up to the sky or bringing your rod straight up to the sky is you are keeping the fish's nose sideways. It's in the water still. Instead of pointing the fish's nose straight up to the sky, which actually creates panic. I mean, and a fish is so much harder to fight when its nose is irregularly straight up and down, straight up to the sky. So the thing is, that's the only thing I can think of that would suggest that larger fish you would do the sideways versus smaller fish straight up and down. I would do, and I actually try to do everything sideways,
yeah.
Whether it's small fish or whether it's large fish. It just means that you're not forcing the fish into yet another unnatural situation. I mean, it's bad enough that they feel some sort of a tug at their mouth, but then to have that tug force their mouth straight up to the sky means they're going to fight you. I mean, they just are. And so
yeah.
I would, the only thing I can think of in terms of the recommendation for the small fish is that if it's a small enough fish, an angler
yeah.
can just bring that fish in so quickly.
Right.
But otherwise,
right.
I would do everything the same. So I don't agree with it, but I love the fact that he plays with his fish, brings them in on the side rather than straight up and down.
I think a straight up and down often gets you a head shake, right, which ends up throwing
and
the hook many times.
That's
they,
right.
Like
that's
you said,
right.
It's not natural, and they just shake their head, and whoop, out comes a hook, you know. So.
And out comes that hook. That's right.
Yeah. We have we're out of time here, but we have one final question. Actually, a question came in on the internet from Nancy Zakon, or Zakon, Key Largo, Florida, asking how you release a fish without hurting it. And then we have a also Ed Constantini was asking basically the same question. You know, what's the best way to fight the fish and avoid overstressing it? And then you know, what's the proper way of handling it upon release? So. Could you kind of end our session tonight with an answer to those questions?
Absolutely. First of all, again, that goes back to playing the fish in terms of I play the fish, my fish, on the side, and I do recommend that. So going back to the question before, which was larger fish versus or smaller fish, I literally I will set my hook on – to the side and keep my rod as parallel to the water as I possibly can so as to keep the fish from pointing straight up to the sky. And I think that helps in terms of controlling a fish when trying to land it. A fish will go the opposite direction from which it's pulled. And if its mouth is pulled to the left, of course, it turns to goes to the right and the other way around. So the thing is, what you want to do is try to keep it going sideways and just slowly work the fish back and forth so that you can bring it right up to you. And you can literally bring the fish right in front of you, upstream of where you're standing, and literally drop your line so the fish no longer feels any tug whatsoever. And then get your net into the water. Because when they see a net, often fish will run again. But just get that net in behind the fish, underwater, and then bring your rod tip up to get with a tug so the tug upstream. I mean, you're not tugging, but the fish feels an upstream tug and will turn around and swim right into your net. And it's a way of keeping the fish as calm as possible so that you don't overstress the animal. And I think, you know, it takes a little bit of practice, but it's a wonderful way to deal with the fish. You don't. The other thing you want to do is use a net from as much as possible. If you can get a hook out of the mouth of a fish without the net, that's fine. That's great. But you want to make sure that you have not overplayed a fish, or that the fish is not so overstressed that you're getting a hook out and letting a stressed fish loose without having had time to rejuvenate itself. So I would use a net, and I would use one of the newer nets, which because they have catch and release nets now, where they aren't going to remove a lot of the meniscus, the layers of that's on the fish that fights all of the algae and the germs. Anyway, I would remove the hook again. First of all, not again, but keeping the fish in the water, but within your net. Remove the hook if the fish has not already spit out the net, hook. Making sure that the fish is faced upstream and not in the heavy current. Allow the fish to get back, rejuvenate itself, to get oxygen back into its system. And then if you just lower the net, the actual net away from the fish, the fish will swim away when it's ready and when it feels, when it's strong enough to. So you touch it. You don't touch it if possible. If you have to take a picture, then you do everything. You keep the fish in the water until the last minute possible, and then pull it, bring it out to take a picture. But you stress the fish as little as possible. That's what you want. I personally am a catch and release for the most time. The people who fish with me it's really, for the most part, everyone does release their fish. There are a few people who, of course, keep fish for and eat them afterwards. But for the most part, most fly fishermen seem to release their fish so that you can either, so the fish can live, and maybe you'll be able to catch that fish or someone else will be another time. So you just don't want to stress the fish.
Right, yep. And that's a good note to end the show on. Catch and release is a great way to fish. And in some parts of the world, that's all you can do, and to protect the resource, which is always good. So, good. Well, Sarah, unfortunately, we're out of time. We did get a lot of questions answered, and that makes me happy. but we got to wrap it up. So, stick with me though, because we're going to give away your book here very shortly, and we'll also be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So everybody, stick around. Remember Sarah's book, Guide's Guide to Fly Fishing Mistakes, courtesy of Skyhorse Publishing. We'll be giving that away too. So hang tight, and we'll do that in just a minute. The Bristol Bay region of Southwest Alaska is home to the largest runs of wild salmon on the planet and some of the best trophy rainbow trout fishing found anywhere. The Pebble Mine still remains a threat to the region, and 2 million acres of federal lands may also be at risk. The entire fly fishing industry is united in this epic conservation battle. Anglers from across the country are joining the fight. Be one of them. Visit SaveBristolBay.org to learn more and to get involved. Again, it's SaveBristolBay.org. Just a reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and leave us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show. It says, what'd you think of the show? Just click on the link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. So now we're going to do our drawings. Drawings are randomly selected from the show's registration database. And if you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for the next show, because you don't want to miss out on your chance at some of the great prizes we have to offer. If you are a lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show and hook up with you to get the information we need to deliver your prize. So the first thing that we're going to give away is a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International. And if you don't win tonight, you want to go to flyfishersinternational.org and check out FFI and become a member. It's a great organization to support and be part of. So, again, our winner for that is going to be Nancy Zakan, who just asked the last question there. In New Hampshire. So congratulations, Nancy, on winning that membership to the Fly Fishers International. So good for you. Thanks for listening and playing. Our second winner, this is for a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, courtesy of AmatoBooks.com, another great publisher of fly fishing periodicals and books. Check them out at AmatoBooks.com. The winner of that subscription is Al Moore in Georgia. Al Moore. So congratulations, Al. And I'm sure you'll enjoy that Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. And now we're going to give away Sarah's book, A Guide's Guide to Fly Fishing Mistakes, Common Problems and How to Correct Them, courtesy of Skyhorse Publishing. And check them out at skyhorsepublishing.com. Question is, and you answer this on our homepage in that text box where you may have asked questions during the show, this time you're going to provide the answer. Same text box. The question is, what's the name of the cast that that Sarah suggested for doing an aerial mend? What's the cast that Sarah suggested for doing an aerial mend? And so now I just keep refreshing the queue. There is a slight delay in the broadcast, Sarah, so we have to wait just a bit for them to get the question and then to respond. So Sometimes it takes a minute. Keep refreshing here, and we'll see if we can get a winner of your book.
Great.
And let's see here. And we've got, I've got a reach cast. Is that the correct answer, Sarah?
That is correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so John Young in Vidalia, Ohio. John Young in Vidalia, Ohio. You just won yourself Sarah's book. So, John, what you need to do, you can use that same text box and just send me your shipping address, and then we'll get a book shipped out to you. So I've got your name, got your email address, just need your shipping address. Then you can put it in that text box or send it to info@askaboutflyfishing.com by email, info@askaboutflyfishing.com. So thanks for playing. Thanks for paying attention. And, Sarah, thank you so much for taking your time out. I know it's getting late out there on the East Coast, but I sure appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us tonight.
Thank you very much. I'm thrilled to be on. This is a great program.
Okay, great, great. I'm glad you enjoyed it, and we surely enjoyed you being on it. Hopefully, all of you have found the archive on our website. If you haven't, just look for the link in the top line of our menu. The archive, you'll find past shows. We've got over 285 shows in the archive now, which you can search by a keyword or keyword phrase, like trout, tarpon, Madison River, fly tying, whatever. And go ahead and explore, and you'll be, I think, pleasantly surprised at what you'll discover there. Our next broadcast will be on December 19th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and on that show I'll be interviewing Rick Takahashi, and our topic for the show will be the art of fly tying. Rick is well known in the fly fishing world as a top fly tier, combining his background in color and design theory, as well as on-the-water testing to create flies that look great and fish great. Join us to learn how Rick approaches his art form and learn his tips of the trade. We'd like to thank Fly Fishers International, Amato Books, Skyhorse Publishing, Whipray Key Fishing Lodge, and Watermaster for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.